But I'm just stating the result. Another area that seemed to pop up, and I did go back out to many of you that to ask about this area, is we asked what is being done in other organizations. And virtually, or basically, there was a no. We don't know. And I think a lot of it, as I went back out and asked, is that we have very little contact with other organizations. That wasn't part of the question, but we have very little contact with the body as a staff. Strong desire for mentoring, but most of them, when asked, they felt, boy, we need some help. We don't really know how to do that. High response for peer interaction. More of it. More of it. I can see that even here being reflected, the times with each other. Career planning, whatever that means, it doesn't happen. And it's virtually non-existent, but there's a great sense, a desire for it. There was an expression, a concern, that our fixed training environment is driving away initiators, men and women of faith. That was particularly a U.S. response. They talked about being few high-potential leaders in our system today. We need more faith and courage and challenge. Again, I'm just reflecting that. Participatory leadership, moving in, new style, and again, the U.S., as the work overseas continues to develop, well then, you know, we'll see that the U.S. has less and less of an influence, and that's true today. That wasn't a negative comment, it was just a comment of observation. But the future, what were some of the things that were expressed? What about leadership development on the next page here? We don't need to tarry a long time on that, but it is interesting to note that there's still a tremendous interest in this area. But you've said here, not top-down, especially international or even at a country level, but more as the top would provide resources, assistance, and stimulation. Not a uniform program for leaders. Let's not start a program that every leader has to go through. You said that very clearly. But yes, we really want leadership development. You want somebody who's thinking about you and your career and development. Not in a career as such of we need to project all your positions so that the next 5 or 6 years, but more in a gifting pattern. Your gifts, your abilities, that we're thinking ahead in those development of those so that when an opportunity or position comes that you're prepared for it. And that's what this point two, career planning, unanimously expressed as need and desired. Someone is planning ahead for me. That's a new way to spell ahead. The term is inappropriate. We've Ralph Ennis, who's here, and if you want to get time with him, he's done a lot of work on this. But we've called it capacity development planning. Capacity development planning, not career development planning. It connotes the wrong thing. Mentoring seen as key to the development of our leaders. Evaluation and feedback. We don't know how to do that, so there's a desire to know more about that. Leadership at all levels must listen and respond appropriately. Are you listening? And that's what came out. My leader doesn't listen. Along with surveying all the leaders of staff, we surveyed 41 followers. Asked them. And then I took it upon myself personally to go back and finding some of the responses we've got from certain leaders and going to those he was leading and asking them more questions. In an all-in effort not to check up on anybody, I haven't made those names available to anyone. If you like to, just see me later. I'll let you know. But just to find out how different things are being perceived, what they're doing, and how one says this and the other says that. We're finding that one says, well, yeah, I'm really listening to my people. And another says, well, he's really not listening. And I said, what do you mean? He says, well, I've got some things that are really on my heart, something I'd like to try to do. But when I try to explain it, he said, well, he listens. And then he says, yeah, but this is what you need to do. Go on to this. Do that. There's a sense in which you're really not listening. We aren't. And we need to work on it. Many of you are. So I'm just bringing this out as a general comment that came out in the survey itself. Expression for the need of a leadership document, that was not, it was no expression. There were some concerns. Concerns. We need more faith and courage to break out of the status quo. There's a concern about materialism at the leadership level, expressed. Leaders too busy, don't have time. Funding, for leadership development. If we like it, who's going to fund it? Flexibility is needed, acceptance of different styles and approaches, and leadership selection must continue to be strong. We want to really control that. Well, then what we've done on this next page is put together a flow, which kind of analyzes some of the trends. And again, we won't have time to go into all of this, but I'd just like to highlight a couple of them for you. You notice, just to get you into that, is leadership selection. We see the criteria over here in our past. Look at it present. We're seeing some things happen, new things come in. And there's a sense in which we're doing well in some of that, but we need to improve on it, and we need to ensure that we have quality of selection. Leadership development. Again, we see personal initiative, nothing organization, basically learned in their responsibility, on-the-job training, still personal initiative presently, but there's a great desire for this development. More exposure to peers. And we even had some percentages there. We asked that question, how much do you feel should be given personal or organizational? But then there was this career planning. Again, we talked about that. Interesting, in the leadership style, we did ask you, what do you feel your gifts are? Participatory, the idea of the consensus decision was coming out, but the gifts basically were in this order. That was the order of priority. Our leaders primarily see themselves as having the gift of exhortation, second, teaching, and third, leadership. I think it reflects a lot of our organizational culture. We are not necessarily giving an emphasis to strong leadership, but more of a building, of a development of people. And it reflects a lot of that. It could possibly reflect the idea that we really don't know a lot of our gifts, and it's presumptuous to say leadership. I find that people shy away from declaring that they are gifted in leadership. Most leaders will kind of hem and haw if they feel that really is their leadership gift. And I think our organization stifles that a little bit. If you go to an organization like Campus Crusade, which I have, and interviewed a number of their people, they unabashedly claim that they're leaders, because their organization, their culture, it recruits those kind of people. And they set a high premium, it's a high value, to be a creative, dynamic leader in their organization. And so you find themselves, they probably would have a different role. Again, that's just an observation. Again, continuing listening. But I think the one thing that perhaps would be helpful just here is over in our progress review. Progress review, look up here in the future part. Must increase. Leaders need help in making personal, developmental, regular, and helpful reviews. Not simply a review of how you're doing, what are your objectives, where are they, and closing a word of prayer. But the idea of developmental. Expectations must be communicated. Many express they have no idea what my leader's expectations are. What are they? And I only find them out when I do something wrong, and then I find out that he had an expectation I wasn't aware of. There's a sense in which here under atmosphere, we need to give some further consideration under these. The area of love, listening, care, a sense of proper biblical accountability, and a sense of affirmation. Competence, that we do well, that we're trained to do the jobs that we are asked to do. A sense of freedom to initiate and to fail. A sense of trust, to trust one another. So we're challenged in our own leadership as we look at that. What do we do? And I think some of the results we came up with are helpful. Now let me just put you through a quick drill here. What every follower wants to know from his or her leader. What everyone wants to know. First of all, what am I to do? What's my job? What are the responsibilities? In a survey that, in this one book I read on coaching, he surveyed 4,000 middle managers. 87% said they were not sure what they're supposed to do. It is one of the biggest areas of need. Simply telling somebody what to do. What are you doing? What am I responsible for? Secondly, the area of expectations. What are your, or the leader's, expectations? What do you expect of me in this job? Not just what am I responsible to do, but are there other expectations that are there that aren't written on the job description, but there are expectations in terms of quality or time or the emphasis or areas that perhaps you're very interested as a leader. We need to communicate those. Will you give me the room, time, and resources to do it? There's a sense in which we often ask people to do things, but we don't give them the time, the room, and the resources. But each of us want that. We want the time, room, and resources to do it. Fourthly is, will you periodically let me know how I am doing? A review, progress. Will you periodically let me know how I'm doing? And lastly, will you help me if I need it? Will you help me if I need it? Remember, if I need it. Let him go. Let him try. Now, I just like, as you perhaps have written these down, on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being, as I've said here, weak, 2 below average, 3 average, 4 above average, and 5 excellent. How would you rate your leader in each area? How would you rate that? Just go down there quickly and put a number by it. How would you rate your leader? In other words, do you know what to do? Do you know the expectations? Well, I know some of them, but do I really know them? Do I have the room, time, and resources to do it? Am I getting periodic review, letting know how I'm doing? And is there help? Help if I need it. 1 to 5, how would it be? Just put it down there. Now, if you've done that, I'd like you to just rate yourself as a leader. Think for a moment on the people you're leading. How would you rate yourself with your staff in each of these areas? Do the same thing, 1 to 5. Sure. That's a good idea. You say, would it be good to have your people do that? You could do this on a man-to-man session. Say, let's just go down. Do you feel you know what to do? Do you feel you know my expectations? If not, we can talk about them. What the amazing thing is somehow these simple little 5 things are a problem to us. I'm not sure whether it's time, whether we haven't formulated or we need to keep doing it, I'm not sure what it is. You perhaps would have better insight on that. But it seems like throughout the leadership world, it's a great problem as well. In the same survey, they found that close to 90% of the 4,000 middle managers that they spoke with did not receive any helpful evaluation on a periodic basis. Now, when I was talking to some of our middle leaders, and mentioned it to them, 2 of them took really exception to that and said, I get together quite often with my person and we have a review, a progress review. I had the opportunity then to call up the 4 men that report to him and asked each one of them to explain the periodic review. 2 of them said he's never had one. 1 of them said that, yeah, we do, but we just go down the list of objectives. And he says, well, how's that one? How's this one? And they're only ministry. And I said, would you like to talk about more? He says, oh yeah, I got a lot more to talk about. And the fourth felt like he had had a little bit, because, but he has more of a personal relationship and he's initiated more of a response. So somehow we're not understanding what that means, to sit down one-on-one and really go through something that's personal, developmental, helpful, and meaningful to someone in what they're doing. Well, these are some of the things we learned in the survey, and this little part of the survey is one you could take and perhaps follow through with. We'll take a break now and pick up on the next page, and we'll take 15 minutes. It's 10:15 right now. Let's just look at this this right here. This is a group of Marines being deployed. I don't know, is there any observations we could make out of this one?
You're on dry land.
Well, that's one. Where is Drake in this picture? That's right. Johnny told me he's back here. He's back here watching it all go. But this is a challenge. This is the Marine vision of or view of leadership. But they're on land, so I'm not sure how far they'll go. They're waiting for the tide to come in. That's another. Ready to go. Good one. I knew if we probably sat there long enough, we'd get some even more observations on that one. John brought up a point that's a good observation on the fact of these 5 points that we talked about, what every leader needs to know. It's not wrong if the who really initiates it. It'd be good that the leader initiates it, but if there's a need for a subordinate to initiate it, fine. And he just said, well, he's initiated some of those areas to discuss them a number of times with his leader. Fine. That's great. And that's the kind of freedom we need to flow back and forth. A number of you have also brought out some points of control, and perhaps coming from our history, our military history and all the rest, we'll be dealing with that because it's got a very, very important aspect. How can we adjust our leadership to meet the demands of the time? Well, let me just cover a little bit on this project, so because it has some bearing on what we're doing now. But our recommendation to the INC as a result of this project was this. Navigator leaders of staff in general are not being adequately prepared for the responsibility or developed in their capacity to lead. We're talking about the skills, the understanding, the models, all that is needed in developing them. But we found that we do well as navigators in training a person to lead a ministry. But as soon as that person begins to lead another staff person, we suddenly are on ice. It's on your own. There's catch as catch can, it's personal initiative, it's survival of the fittest, on the job training. All of that there may be many good parts of that. But what I'm saying is that we do not take any initiative or very little initiative in developing the capacity of the leader to lead and in particularly preparing them to lead. One of the things that was very revealing is taking a study that had been done in 1980-81 of 27 removed leaders from the navigators or in the navigator organization and studying those. And we found that a great many of them, as we look back, had never been prepared properly for the position they took. And that's the idea there. I think there's a new twist. I was spending some time with Howie Hendricks a couple weeks ago and going through a lot of these things. He said he believes that in the Navigators and perhaps in other organizations, we have a new manifestation of the Peter Principle. The Peter Principle being, of course, that you're promoted to the level of your incompetence. In other words, you're competent one level and you're promoted up, and then suddenly You're not capable of handling that. He believes the new twist is that we're promoted to the level of our inadequate preparation. We promote people to the level of their inadequate preparation. He feels there are many people around that if they had been properly prepared, they'd be doing well in the job. But they are thrown into it, and we'll be dealing with that, how we can prevent that kind of thing. So we need clarity in the area of leadership. There are so many voices today. The market's flooded with them. But the recommendations were these five. Basically, we need to have developmental relationships. Many of you during the break mentioned this area. Is not, you know, one of you was bringing up our military background. Some of our staff were waiting around to be told what to do. Because to get into the culture of the navigators, you've got to buy into certain things. You need to salute periodically. You need to kind of be a team man. There are these subtle values. Well, we're not trying to destroy those values at all. But what we're saying is that we could very well cause a bottleneck in our whole work. That if the supervisor has to meet all of the needs of this subordinate, and the subordinate is looking to the supervisor, I don't care whatever level, for all of his needs to be met, you and I both know that they'll never be adequate to the task. So we've got to develop developmental relationships, and we'll be discussing this idea of the supervisor-apprentice relationship, or the subordinate, or the apprenticing, mentor-mentoree, and the peer relationship. Then we sense that in our leadership levels there is an area of great need in personal accountability. And this is scary, because in our day and age of loosening of areas, perhaps in the area of divorce and loosening up in other disciplines, perhaps in our changing of times, we're noticing that leaders, particularly men, are becoming less and less accountable to other people on a personal level. And the concern I have is that your leader probably can never provide the accountability that you and I need on a personal basis. It's got to happen in other ways. And I made quite a study of this in 9 years ago, that has literally changed my life in the whole area of accountability. And I've had the opportunity of presenting that a number of times, and it's just a concern that I would have in the area of personal accountability, how you develop those relationships, because we seem to be good at the vertical, but very, very weak at the horizontal, the Jonathan-David relationships, the peer levels. And it's the peer level that keeps track of our personal life. The leader and the one you're leading are not going to speak or see you enough or not feel the right to speak to some personal areas. But peers will. And that's where we need that. But the unfortunate situation is we don't give time or priority to it. And we'll be talking a little bit about that. Capacity development planning, I mentioned that to you. And if you want to get some time with Ralph Ennis, who's here, he's been doing a lot of work on that. He's got a paper on it, and I know that he'd be glad to send it to you if you requested it. Some of the work he's doing. But really, the work needs to be done by us in the field to help develop people. And it's not that we want to have a job projection, but more a plan that will develop our abilities, gifts, and skills in a direction that God seems to be equipping us and calling us to. Then there were some vital leadership skills, and I've gone down these communication two ways, and that we really listen to one another, take one another seriously. The exchange of expectations, expressing, discussing, and agreeing to one another, expectations of each other, both the leader and the led. The progress review I've already mentioned. Coaching is a tremendous need, a skill area. We really have to develop in that area of directing, direct influence without taking over, counsel without directing, and feedback without criticism. Those are just a couple of key areas that I've mentioned there. But coming alongside and helping without taking over, that kind of thing. Coaching is very important. Relational, the relations we need, and developing that relation where there's trust and they're edifying. The idea of vision we talked about, and then motivating others. How to inspire others to take steps of faith and overcome obstacles in God-given tasks. And then finally, we talked about this, we suggested that we really work at the steps of leadership selection. If we had done this with these 27 removed leaders, I believe we wouldn't have had to remove them, and in many cases would not have placed them into it. We do place people, and we can talk about these things, but as one person shared at the break, aren't a lot of people placed in position because he was a buddy of someone, or he's been around for a long time, he has tenure. And that's probably true. And that may be forever true. We do happen to respond to those that are responding to us. But if we could somehow initiate, and there are questions behind this, there's an actual sheet that we've come out with that would help us. If we just ask those questions, we could really prevent some misassignments, strengthen the assignment when he goes into it, and really help ourselves. Well, that concluded the project, and I just wanted you to be brought into the background because it will bear on several of the things that we're talking about here that I think you'll find helpful. Then I'd just like to touch base on page 8 there with you. I feel we need to know a little bit of where we're going to go. What is the goal? If we're going to develop leaders, we need to understand what they are. And I, like you, have probably done a lot of study on this. We've heard of different things, and different things have come out. Many of us have been exposed to the three S's, the shepherd, steward, and servant. But in analyzing that and going into some study, I just like to present something to you that I have found at this point to be helpful. Leaders who assume positions in the body of Christ must be maturing and certainly qualifying. And in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1 give us a list of those qualifications. But he needs to be something. Those qualifications doesn't tell what he does, but what does a leader do? And what are his responsibilities? Well, first of all, he's a servant, a bondsman. And these passages are very familiar to you. Important distinction, he's a servant of God and a servant to people. He's not a servant of people, of others. I see people running around perhaps and have attached themselves or committed themselves to be a servant of others. And so they're basically responding to all the needs and wishes of other people. And that's not what he's talking about. If we look through the scriptures, we find that David and Jesus and Paul and all of them referred to themselves as servants of God. Servants, as Paul then says, to be under his control and a bond slave. But we are to serve others as well. It's important in the distinction of serving God, being first of all servants of God, and it's he that we are trying to please. I think in Ephesians, I hadn't written this one down, but Ephesians chapter 6, verse 7 and 8, he talks about, Paul mentions that we are to, as he says here, serve wholeheartedly as if you were serving the Lord, not men, because you know the Lord will reward everyone for whatever good he does, whether he is a slave or free. We serve the Lord. It's important in this day and age of serving to identify that and emphasis and people talking about it. If you've read the book that Gene Fleming has written, Between Waldron and the Whirlwind, excellent book. I have read it many times and given it to others. But she brings out in one particular place an illustration of George Balanchine. George Balanchine, of course, was the great director, the ballet director of the New York Ballet, and was well known as a tremendous teacher and developer of some of the greatest ballet stars and who had went on to do great things. He had an unusual relationship with with each of these pupils, so much to the point that they honored and respect him so that when they danced, he was not only the director, but he was their audience as well. And one person even responded that, one of the pupils, that when I dance, the whole crowd, there can be a tremendous crowd there in the audience of a performance, but when I'm dancing for George Balanchine. He was the one they wanted to do well for. He was not only the director, but he was their audience. He was the one that meant the most to when he said, well done. They could have heard the audience clapping and clapping, but after the performance, they wanted George's well done. And I think that's the way it is with Christ. We serve him in the midst of all of the people that we are helping and serving in a sense, but we are servants of God. He is the director, and he is the audience for us. It's helpful to identify Romans 14, 17 and 18. Because there it talks about if you're going to serve and be acceptable to God and approved of man, that you need to serve with righteousness, peace, and joy. Righteousness, being right before God, perhaps not always right with man, and the fact that what he feels he needs, but we go before God and find out what God feels he needs. That peace, in one translation it calls it heart peace. Not a resistance or a bristling, but a sense of doing what is God's will. Doing his will always brings peace. And then joy. Not irritating, but the joy of obeying Christ. In him is strength and joy. So as we serve with righteousness, heart peace, and joy. Sometimes I wonder, as we travel, as we do things, as we fulfill our jobs, what are people picking up regarding being a servant of God? When I was over in Europe, particularly, had a number of opportunities to be with leaders of other organizations. In one particular place, I was talking to one man. I said, "Would you like to? What are your aspirations?" And he was telling me different things. I said, "Well, would you ever want to be involved with what your dad's doing?" He said, "Oh, no. No. All there are is problems." And people just literally pull the rug out from under him. He says, "My dad, no. People have just dumped all over him." I said, "Where have you heard that?" He said, "Well, we talk a lot about it. Hear my mom and dad talking a lot about it at the dinner table." What are our kids picking up? Some people say, "Oh, well, I don't want my kids to be with the Navs." Boy, I'd love my kids to be with the Navs. But how are they going to pick that up? Is it exciting? You get the call at 10 o'clock and you put it down. "Oh, another guy just screwed up again and I've got to talk to him. And, phooey, I'm going to have to change my plans." Or, "Boy, another letter from headquarters and now they want me to do this. Boy, I wish those guys would get the thing put together right." What are you communicating? What are you communicating to your staff? Is it a privilege to serve the living God? Is that what they hear? Or is it all muffled with the complaining, with the irritation, the bristling, because this human organization called the Navigators isn't necessarily fitting in to all that worked out that way? Do you think that Jesus ever heard, they heard Jesus complaining? Coming down off time alone with the Lord, and suddenly, these guys tried to throw out that demon. His disciples couldn't do it, and so he dealt with it. But you haven't come down, he says, "Gee whiz. I mean, my father said go do this, and gee, now it's this. And hey, would you get the plan up there straight? You know, would you please arrange circumstances so I can serve correctly?" But it's any time, anywhere, anything, Lord. It's in one home. And all five of the kids were serving the Lord Jesus in different capacities. I was really attracted. I got with the kids. They're all adults. I said, "What was it that really causes you to want to just do all this?" And they said, "Well, we just sensed that the Lord is calling." And one said, "Probably the biggest thing is we grew up in a home where mom and dad said the greatest privilege is to serve the living God. In whatever way he calls." And he said, "My dad had a full-time job." It was in Czechoslovakia where he could not be a pastor full-time. He had a full-time job that often went into 10 hours a day. And he'd come home at night, there'd be a phone call, he'd have to go see someone, go pray with them, go help them. Things that went wrong, but he went off. A little prayer with his mom and dad, or the kids, they gathered together, they got involved, never complaining. It's a privilege to serve the living God. We need to evaluate our own hearts on this to make sure we are first and foremost servants of the living God. Well, then there are other responsibilities. We're to be overseers. And that's a biblical word, and that's why I've gone with that. He's a superintendent. He's a bishop. You see that mentioned in Titus 1:7 and Acts 28. Also in 1 Timothy 3:12 and the other passage I've mentioned there. He is one, as you see down the line, he is one who keeps watch over and directs the works of others. He's more than a steward, although he's a steward. And so the word overseer captures that whole idea. He's a guardian of those, of the things that God has given to him to be responsible for. The best illustration of that is in Nehemiah. He was effectively an overseer, overseeing the building, the division of labor and the building of the wall. Secondly, he has to be a shepherd. A pastor is also used in that same word. Peter challenges us in 1 Peter 5 to be shepherds of the flock God has given to us. One who guides, guards, and tends. But I don't sense at all it's kind of a fuzzy love caring. It's that, but it's more. It's a tough love. If you read Psalm 23 and then read the commentary by Philip Keller as the shepherd looks at the Psalm 23, you see it's a leading out and leading in. It's a dealing with the sheep when they're wrong, and that crook can be hard on that sheep that has gone astray. But it's tough love. And it's not an option. It's not a style. Well, I'm kind of a... Yes, you may be more gifted as a shepherd, but it's a responsibility for all of us in leadership. It includes that when we're actually doing it with the people in the presence of the shepherd, but as Jesus often went alone to pray. What do we do not in their presence? Sometimes we make hard decisions that we'll never know otherwise. It's interesting, when we're coming down, Chuck Singletary, and as we're riding down the car, we're chatting, and he said when he first came into the NAVS, he wasn't around when Dawson was there. He was in the mid-50s. He had just died. But there are a number of people who knew him well. So he asked a number of these people who grew up with Doss and were under him, what did they remember Doss for? What were the things about him? And as I've read the book, I there are a number of impressions I have. But without exception, Chuck said these people told him, he loved me. He loved me. But it was a tough love sometime. But invariably, if he had to choose someone out, you've probably read those stories where we'd go alone up into the mountains and pray, perhaps all through the night. He was a shepherd in their presence, but also not in their presence. And perhaps some of the greatest things that Doss did, and even Paul and Jesus and many, as I observed their ministries, the greatest things of what they did with their flock outside of their presence. The shepherding, the caring. And then he's an equipper, a developer, a builder. And this, of course, we get in Ephesians 11 and 12, where we are to, these gifts are given so that we could do what? Equip the saints, develop them, build them up for the ministry. I've noted down here there are two goals in biblical equipping, as I've seen it. Colossians 1:28, Paul talks about the building them up. So I give myself now to build these people up, to make them complete in every area of their life, bringing them to full maturity. And he says he does this with all his heart and all his commitment and all the energy that God gives him. In Ephesians 4:12, we see that it's equipping to prepare for the ministry, whether it be leadership, whether it be leading a Bible study, whatever it is. Equipping equips the life and the ministry. Now, we have different capacities and gifting. Each is needed, but they are unique to the equipping of saints. I've listed here five what I believe are proven tools that the leader has. They're not necessarily tools, perhaps you tell them to do this, do that, but I believe when we start talking about equipping leaders especially, these are five that would always be found. I see them in Nehemiah's life. I see them in Jesus' life. I see them in Paul's, and I've experienced them in my own. There's prayer, and we know that as John 17, and we see in Ephesians and Philippians where Paul prays for these people. We see him using the Word and teaching. In 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17, we know that the Word is able to teach, instruct, and build up. And 17 says, why? So that the man of God might be what? Thoroughly equipped. Equipped. The Word is an equipping tool. Responsibility. And I'll be going over how that can be used. It's one of the best tools that a developer, a one as a leader, in developing leaders, one of the best tools we could possibly have in our development. And I'll give some illustration of that. And then exposure. Exposure to the right people in the right situations at the right time. We need to be working at that. Peers and men and women of experience and thinking. I had a good time one time. there were two staff that were just so, it was in Germany, and they're just so, all was so detailed, and all was so fixed on what had to be done, and they're a little bit critical of other organizations that didn't do that. So I got praying, and I talked to him about this. I tried to help him in different ways. Then an opportunity came along, and if you're familiar with Operation Mobilization, it's just a tremendous organization, but diametrically opposed to the Navigators, particularly in Germany. Careful, detailed. I mean, they just throw people together in a conference, and a day before the conference, George Verwer will gather the leaders together and ask what we want to do. It's just absolutely wild. If you've ever heard George Verwer, wherever you can go, if you ever hear that he's going to speak, go hear him. He's 5'9 and dripping wet, about 120 pounds, but he's 120 pounds of heart and lungs. He speaks, he doesn't need a PA system at all. But he's a guy in our time who's a pioneer, who has been raised up, and he grew up in the town right next to me, and I used to hear about him all the time, and I know him quite well, and my family does, and it's just exciting to watch him. But here are these two staff, and well, why don't we get them over to OM? Because every year they bring all these people from Europe and America, and they bring them to Belgium, to Brussels, and they pack them in to this facility. Everybody sleeps all over on the floors, and there are a couple thousand there. I mean, you've got to see it to believe it. I mean, every navigator walks in and they just starts to ask questions. What's going to happen? I mean, it's not planned. It's not worked out. And George Verwer is up there saying, believe God and go! You know, trust God and get out there! And, you know, and every navigator is saying, but, I mean, you know, well, you know, like this. So I said, this is the experience they need. And I prayed about it and sent them over there to lead a seminar on how to teach the Word. So these guys prepared well, and they got there a day in advance, met the staff, and walked up to the guy who was directing the conference, and he said, which room, seminar room, am I going to have, and how many people are going to be in my group? He says, well, I don't know what room you'll have, and can't tell you how many until right before it will announce how many want to go to that one. So he said, how am I going to know how many handouts to give out? He says, trust God. So he says, okay, you know, so they cranked out. Now, there are almost 3,000 people there. Turned out that 1,600 wanted that seminar. Well, back to the beginning. So he says, now, what room do I have? He says, oh, hey, Fred, you know, come over here, Fred. Fred, do you know what room these guys could have? He said, well, what room do you want? He said, well, it really is a function of how many are going to be there. He says, well, we've never had that seminar before. How many of you think that they would have? I don't know. You know, they talk back and forth. He says, well, let's give them the basement of that church we just got, you know, that they're letting us use. So he said, well, great. Yeah, it's about a block down over there. He says, well, does somebody have the key? Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. There's a guy who lives behind. He may know, you know. And so he sent him out there. He got there. And they went to the guy behind. It took them 2 hours to get the key. They got in there, and it only seated about 200. So the two look at each other, and they say, well, gee, if we have more than 200, you know, we better go back. So they went back and told him, boy, it only seats 200, and, there's no blackboard or nothing in there, you know, or overhead. He says, well, just go ahead and, you know, feel free to put in there whatever you want. He said, well, I mean, is you have any? He says, no, I don't think so. Hey, Bill, do we have any overheads or anything? No, I didn't bring any. Well, you know, so anyhow, it went on. Well, these guys were absolutely frustrated. I mean, they did not know what to do. They pulled aside the guy and asked him, you know, did you plan ahead? I mean, how about, you know, what's your plan and where? I mean, there was nothing. I mean, he called a few guys and, well, here are these 3,000 kids packing in. I mean, and they said they stood out there and watched this. I mean, registration table? Well, you know, it was a table. And they said, okay, you 16 people here, okay, you all come together? Yeah, try and see if there's enough room in that building over there. All right, now, the next thing, you know, meeting starts at 8 o'clock. Yeah, breakfast is at 8 o'clock. Yeah, come early, it'll be a real crowd. You know, it's like, I mean, it was absolutely fun to hear these guys tell the story. Well, then the breaking point was about 3 days later, into the conference. The conference goes on for 2 weeks, and it just really is wild. And the kids are just really getting up, and George Verwer was up there, and, well, God's starting to speak to these guys. I mean, they saw this guy, and the thing about it is, he speaks very fast. And so this guy is trying to interpret them next to him, you know. And George, just not even any consideration. He just, you know, just go on. The guy, you know, and he's going back and forth, losing half of it. But they're, I mean, the enthusiasm and the commitment just coming through. Many of them probably didn't understand what he said, but came forward anyhow. You know, it was just wild. But, I mean, he went through this. It was just really fun to hear. But that night he got talking about faith and believing God. And boy, you get him talking about the world and its needs. And, you know, their hearts are challenged. And here are all these kids going out. And so the idea then that one afternoon was to go out and take these bag of books and a plastic bag. They got them all together. And you're to go door to door and sell them. And they had put together teams. And if you're sitting in this, you're in that team. And if you're sitting in this area, you're on that team. And here there's a map, and we put a red mark around each one of your, in the number, and this is a section of the city you're supposed to go to, and to, you know, so we can cover the whole city. So they hand out the maps, and he says, all right, this bag of books, you know, and some guy, any questions? Some guy said, well, how much? What are we selling for? Whatever you can get. Praise God, you know, like this. And so he holds up the books. So one guy says, well, what happens if we knock on the door and give the books? And because they gave a little demonstration where you kind of get the book and stick it in and talk to him. And he says, and the guy slams the door without the books. He says, praise God, we got one book in. You know, and he's going on. So he says, well, now, you know, here, and the navigator guys are going crazy. They're saying, you know, how do we get enough? And then, so when he got with his group, he said, well, now, how are we all going to get there? They said, well, everybody get there any way they can. Well, then, you know, what streets? Well, if you see another guy in the same street, don't go to that street. You know, it was... By Thursday, things have started to change. And it was just so exciting. Well, those guys came back. God had done a work in their life. They were ready to go wherever God wanted them to go. They had seen God minister and use that experience in these guys and these people's lives. They had seen what happened. It freed them up. So that's what exposure at the right time, the right place can do. And we need to be doing that. Modeling, we all know that from Philippians 4:9, from Paul, how he talks about that whole aspect of that which you've seen in me, do, follow through. And it's a tremendous impact. We talked to Professor Bobby Clinton of the School of World Missions in Fuller, said that as he looked at the navigators, and he's done somewhat of a study, that there are two ways you influence a navigator. That's by modeling and by experience. So it's really important, modeling. If we want to do something, we say something and do another, they'll do what we do. It's a very important aspect, particularly in the navigators. Well, how do you tie this all together? And I didn't put this illustration on there, but here's the way I see it. I see that the servant is the basic mid-heart of these responsibilities. And that servanthood is expressed through the other three areas. So that as a servant, he is an overseer and he serves people by overseeing. He serves others by being a shepherd. He serves others by being an equipper. Now this triangle is probably the triangle of Jesus Christ, all sides being equal. But our triangle would probably look a little bit different. It might, perhaps, if we drew the triangle based on the amount of gifts, perhaps our equipping side would be that side. Maybe our overseeing side would be a real strength, and shepherding would be even more of a strength. And so our triangle might look different. Somebody else's might be more of this. But each one would reflect the abilities, the capacities, the gifting that we have. But all three of these jobs need to be done. But in the center of every triangle is the servanthood. And of course, in the center of that even, and is the Lordship of Christ. We can't get away from that, because a servant cannot be a servant without the Lordship of Christ. And Paul, of course, says that in 2 Corinthians 4:5, that we claim Jesus Christ as Lord, and our servants for your sake, servants for his sake. So we see that. We see that as a leader. We see that as a different things in our life. I think an excellent verse that goes along expressing that is in 1 Peter 4:10, which says this, each one should use whatever gift he has received to serve others, faithfully administering God's grace in various forms. Our gifts are given. These responsibilities are to serve those that God has given us to serve, to lead. I don't know where you'd place yourself and how you'd draw your own triangle, but each of us would be different. Let me just stop for a second if there's any questions or any thoughts at this point regarding this. Any additions? All right, that's excellent. Thank you. Yes?
Paul was just talking about OM. You want to say a little more that perhaps we're a little insensitive, whether it's by trying to do anything, and appreciate fully whatever work, whatever people are doing, and that perhaps we're a little too close in on ourselves and respect.
That wasn't my intent, no. It was strictly to illustrate an exposure that can be helpful to a person. But what you're saying is very valid. I think opportunities that will help us, if we're going to think kingdom, we've got to get out there, and that's one of the great needs, I believe, in our organization is kingdom thinking. It's the kingdom that will accomplish the Great Commission. We've got to learn more what others are doing and find out where we can help. It was interesting that those two men had a tremendous effect. They taught 1,600 on how to have quiet time and how to get in the Word, and they were getting one-on-one times and counseling, on into the night every night there. So they made a tremendous contribution, and their leader has asked, the next year he asked for 10 of them. We were not able to provide that many, but we did provide about 5 or 6 that next year. But, you know, and it's an ongoing thing, so it's a good combination. Yes.
On this matter of service, this last night I read through the Gospel of Mark and was so impressed with all the people that kept modeling Jesus trying to help and treat him because he was serving. He couldn't get away from people because they were strong and trapped to help him so they could draw more.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about growth. If we're serving, we're going to have money to.
Yep. I think what concerned me is sometimes, for instance, if we see servant, if what happens if we put one of these things, or put servant out as one of the sides? It doesn't work, does it? You see, the servant, and that's why I put a box on it, it stands out by itself. It is so foundational to leadership. It's foundational to everything we do. That then we serve, and like I said, each triangle will be different, and that points out another area that we not only have a need to develop. Maybe one side of your triangle is very small, and maybe you're not gifted in that, but you need to develop and work in it. But it also points out the area of a need for others. The perfect leader left 2,000 years ago. But we need other triangles. We need other gifting around us to pull it off. And that's an important aspect, and we'll be covering a little bit of that later. Yes, Gary. Say that again now. Yes. Okay.
My question is, what is it?
Yeah. Okay, that could very well be. You know, you're saying that if we just move one of those in here, and I've seen that, and I think I've wrestled with that in my own life. Sometimes I get the idea that, well, because I feel a strong side of my life might be the area of overseeing, and perhaps my gifting strengthens that area. And therefore, I get the idea that my contribution first is overseer. But I'm first a servant. It needs to be used as servant, serving the people and overseeing. Not, I need to express my gift. Or, you know, in other words, and I find a lot of that with people saying, well, I've gifted in this way, and that's the only thing I can do. You know, or that's the way I ought to be used. And that may be true. Ultimately, we want to plug that person in that area. But I think what happens is, every leader, I believe, has responsibility. He or she may have help in that area to strengthen that, but they are responsible. You may not be a good shepherd, but you still are responsible to shepherd your people. And you may get some help in there in shepherding.